All right, we're in chapter 9, just beginning. 9, 10, 11, and 12. Takes that long to get all those conclusions in there. After you've done as much searching as Solomon has done. And in verse 1, beautiful, beautiful truth, if we can catch it. For all this I considered in my heart, even to declare all this, that the righteous and the wise and their works are in the hand of God. No man knoweth either love or hatred by all that is before them. In other words, there's a ruling power beyond your circumstances. Your situation in life does not dictate how you experience life. And that was that important phrase I gave you yesterday. It's just the truth. There are people that are happy in every situation. There are others that are sad in every situation. I mean, the situation is not the circumstance is not the determiner. It's the attitude of heart. And he says here something very interesting in the Hebrew. The word declare. For all this I considered in my heart, even to declare all this. And the word declare literally means to purge. To purge. And what I believe he's saying is that he considered all these things in his heart to purge, that is, to take off all the unrelated and obscuring thoughts from the main idea. This is what somebody that has discernment does. This is somebody who has understanding does. He looks at a thing and he purges it. That is, he takes off all the unrelated and obscuring ideas to find out what is the real meat of this thing. It's like a person that's used in the army to spot out snipers. And they like to get guys that are colorblind. Because they'll look at something and color will deceive us and we'll think that, you know, he's just part of the background. But he looks at shape. And so he'll look at a tree and he'll see a shape in the tree. We are impacted with the color and it's all green. He sees the shape and he picks out the guy. Because there's one line that's a little bit too long and a little bit too straight from all the other lines of that tree. And it's the guy's back, you know, or it's his helmet or head or whatever, see. And nobody else would have seen it, just him. And he's able to take off all the obscuring and unrelated aspects to find out that which he's really looking for. But that takes a lot of wisdom. Well, that's what he's done. And in doing that, he sees that the righteous and the wise and their works are in the hand of God. They really are. God ultimately has control. And remember, he's the one that has subjected us to vanity. He subjected us to vanity. But we see that no man, therefore, either knows love or hatred by all that is before them. In other words, your deepest experiences of emotion and human reaction will not be known by the circumstance that you're in. Man is not in control of love and hatred simply because of his experiences. Love and hatred are determined by the person and how he deals with this vanity. That's how love and hatred are determined. How is he going to deal with this vanity? And these works, the man's life and the works are in the hand of God. He cannot dictate what he's going to experience. He can't. You can't dictate what you're going to experience. You can't decide, I'm going to have a life that's just like this, and I'm going to only experience that. You may, at the age of 16, get in a car wreck and be paralyzed the rest of your life. I mean, all those hopes and aspirations are gone like that. You don't know. You really don't know. You don't know what will happen. Life takes funny twists and turns. And so we do not subject things, but we are subjected ourselves. See, that's the point. We do not subject our circumstances to us, but we are subjected to our circumstances. And certainly there are things that we control. But ultimately, all these things are in the hand of God. And therefore, it's up to us whether we are going to live in love or in hatred. And that's really a sobering thought. I'd like to read Jeremiah 10, verse 23. You can maybe more understand what Jeremiah is saying here now. It's kind of a deep verse here. It says, O Lord, I know that the way of man is not in himself. It is not in man that walks to direct his steps. That's interesting. Man does the walking, but he doesn't direct his steps. That's really interesting. Because we just don't know. Those things are in the hand of God. We just don't know what's going to befall us. But it's up to us whether we're going to be, you know, fulfilling love or hatred. That is our choice. We can have somebody do us wrong and either love them or hate them. So love and hatred is not known by what's before you. This is such an important concept. It really is. Because again and again, people think that they have to respond and act according to their circumstances that they cannot control. And what does that make you? That makes you a robot. It makes you a Calvinist. You know, I can't help it. Just everything that will be, will be. Fate. See? What a horrible thing. What a horrible thing to live under. All right. And then verses 2 through 6 now, he concludes that the one thing that you possess in this life is your life, your soul, the real you. That's the one thing you possess. You don't possess your circumstances. You can't always control your circumstances. But you do possess your life, your soul. Because all things happen to all men, it seems. And that one thing that you do possess, one day you will finally lose. And so use it while you got it. Take control of it while you got it. And don't let circumstances rule you. So let's read. All things come alike to all. There's one event to the righteous and to the wicked, to the good and to the clean and to the unclean, to him that sacrifices and to him that sacrifices not. As is the good, so is the sinner. Neither swears as he that fears an oath. This is an evil among all things that are done under the sun, that there is one event unto all. Yea, also the heart of the sons of men is full of evil, and madness is in their heart while they live, and after that they go to the dead. So it doesn't seem to matter what we're like, wise, full of madness, full of folly, we all lose that one thing. And the heart is full of madness. Madness is in their heart while they live. Why is madness in their heart while they live? Because they've got eternity in their heart, and the eternity is not fulfilled in this vanity, and it creates a madness. And it's true. The world is full of madness. It is. It is. Everybody is living in that frustration, you know, to one extent or another. Why? Because they're seeking to fulfill the eternity by that which is temporal. The world is full of people that are doing that. And therefore, they're never satisfied. They're always, there's always a frustration and a... things that you try to work for and there's no reward in it. You know, it's always a vanity. Demons will fan to a flame all the temporal desires. Demons will fan to a flame all the temporal things that you see and that you hear, all that is in the world, in order to cause you even greater madness. Now, reading on, verse 4, "For to him that is joined to all the living, there is hope. For a living dog is better than a dead lion." Now, you've probably often heard that it's better to be a dead lion than a living dog, you know, because a good name is better than ointment. But when you're looking at life the way he's looking at it, in the natural eye, by that which is observable, when you die, it's all over. It's all over. So do everything you can to stay alive. Because even if you're a lion, if you're dead, big deal. Great. What good has it done? See? Better to be a living dog than a dead lion. Now, in the sense that he means it, he's right. In other words, don't do something that is, super foolhardy and is seeking to find the chief good. That is something that is temporal, when it's not going to do it for you. It's like some of the kamikaze pilots, you know, in the Second World War, they had a big drum up of all the, the great rewards they get in glory by giving their lives for the state, and so a lot of them did just that. But there were some of them that, and they'd all get drunk because it was just such a horrible thing. But there were some of them that wouldn't do it. They took off in their planes. Some of them took off in their planes and circled and came back and strafed their airport and tried to kill the officers. Don't hear much about that. Others would try to fly away, go land somewhere else, save their life, some of them weren't too happy about the whole thing because they realized that this is a joke. Here I am, I'm just going to kill myself and I'm a young man. And there were a lot of good pilots who gave their lives. Men that had years and years of training. Blow it up on, and a lot of them missed their target. Missed their target. Gave their lives. Missed their target because the planes were, cheaper planes. Just put enough fuel in them to go one-way trip. It was just a total embarrassment to the nation and to their religion and to human life, human existence. Wise men will use this life to enjoy the fleetingness of it, recognize that it is fleeting and that it is not eternal. the wicked, the knowledge that this life has no fulfillment in as far as eternal, it causes them to sin because they have no immediate judgment. And so they respond the opposite way. But look on, let's read on verses 5 and 6. For the living know that they shall die, but the dead know not anything, neither have they any more a reward, for the memory of them is forgotten. Also their love and their hatred and their envy is now perished, neither have they any more a portion forever in anything that is done under the sun. So it's better to be alive. If you're going to have to go through this vanity, better to experience all you can in life than to be dead and gone and not have any more to experience. And their love and their hatred and their envy is now perished. Even their envy. Even your envy will not procure eternal life. Love or hatred, those are the extremes of emotion. But also your envy, all that desire, even it will not bring any life. You're going to die anyway. And so the only hope you have is when you're alive. And see, this is, you know, really, we need to take life every day as a day to be lived to the full. Every day should be, this is another day. The sun is risen again. There is another opportunity. There is hope because I am alive. There is hope because I'm alive and there's chance for another day. And because all these other things, that's not going to bring it. And so we just need to know that there's no ultimate in this life but just to live it to its full. Yeah.
Those teachings of falsehood, how would you add to that?
Using this verse, how would I add to it now?
Answer that.
Okay, verse 5. For the living know that they shall die, but the dead know not anything, neither they any more reward. I would use other scriptures in Ecclesiastes that point out that all he is viewing is that which is under the sun. The guy is gone. He doesn't know anything. He can't tell you anything, can't say anything. He's gone. And all it is from what you're observing under the sun. And, you know, just like the next phrase, better a living dog than a dead lion, or the previous one. Spiritually and eternally speaking, that's not true. Much better to be a martyr for Jesus Christ than a live backslider. But in this sense, see, and so all you have to do is just go to the context and go to the other verses around and show that, well, if you take it this way, well, then you've also got to take this one here, and that contradicts the teachings of Jesus, and so see, that doesn't work. It's just viewing it under the sun. What you view with your eye, what you see. Okay, now verse 7. Go thy way. Go thy way. This word go signifies a conclusion reached after much deliberation that now you must apply. So after all this has been said, and you're alive or you wouldn't be reading this. He's not talking to the dead lion, right? Go thy way, eat thy bread with joy, and drink thy wine with a merry heart, for God now accepts thy works. In other words, enjoy this life. Live it wisely, and live it fully to what it can offer you. How will you do that? By living it in moderation and the fear of God. Living it in moderation and the fear of God. For God accepts thy works. Well, that's an interesting phrase. Accepts literally means has pleasure in. Therefore, he's not saying, go thy way and live wickedly. But he said, eat thy bread with joy. You can only do that to the full when you're a righteous man. You'll get more enjoyment out of your bread when you're a righteous man and you didn't steal it. You get more enjoyment out of your wine when you're drinking it to moderation. And you have a merry heart, not a soused mind where you're just totally plastered. But you have a merry heart. Because wine makes the heart of man glad. And so he's viewing it that way. Live it up because God accepts your works. That is, live it to the proper realm that God has given you to enjoy. Moderation and the fear of God. And why does he accept your works? Because God knows you can only do so much. Oh, I tell you. If the saints of God would believe this. God accepts thy works. You can only do so much. And he's put you in a body of vanity and corruption. And he's put you in a world of vanity. And therefore, be wise and moderate with what you have. God has accepted it. He's not expecting you to be eternal when you're temporal. Hasn't it frustrated you? It has frustrated me sometimes when I realize, like, you know the impact that it has on your life when you just spend hour after hour after hour in prayer? And what happens in your life? And, oh, you know, like at a camp meeting or at a retreat when you just spend all day, you know, just seeking God, praying and seeking God. And then you have to go home. And then you've got a job, and you've got to work, and you've got, you know, you got family, and you got responsibilities, and you got to mow the lawn, and you got all of this. Boy, speaking of mowing the lawn, I'm not going to mow the lawn. I'm going to have to bail it here pretty quick. I can't even find my dog in the backyard at all. Anyway, you know, you got these responsibilities, and you wish, why, Lord, how come? Why don't you let me? Just why don't you just do something? So all I have to do is pray, read the word, witness. I would just love that. Just all read the word, pray, and witness, and just win the lost. And I wouldn't have to eat, so I wouldn't have to stop to do that, and I wouldn't have to sleep, so I could go 24 hours around the clock. Lord, why don't you do that, you know? And if I had all that extra time, look at how I could just go in God. It just seems like it's not fair.
Yeah.
And especially when we're looking at eternity. I mean, Lord, we're looking at eternity! Ah! You know? I tell you, that spirit of legalism will drive you up a wall. And that's what it does. And I've struggled with that in times past at times, you know. And all you can do is come back down and say, well, I ate this morning, but I'm hungry again, and it's only noon, you know. Vanity. Vanity of vanities. I slept last night and now I'm sleepy again. Gotta go to bed again tonight. Vanity of vanities. All is vanity. And you can only do so much. God accepts your works. God accepts your works. If you will live moderately in the fear of God, God accepts your works. He has pleasure in them. That spirit of legalism, it does everything it can to take away that peace and that joy in your heart from just, you know, walking before God and just being satisfied with what you are. Some of us grew up with parents and weren't satisfied with anything we did. And it's blighted us. We are deceived. You know, we're not living right the way God wants us to live. So be wise and moderate with what you have. God has accepted it. Verse 8. Let thy garments be always white, and let thy head lack no ointment. Now, white garments are garments of feasting and joy. It's interesting that Josephus writes that Solomon was always clad in white. What is he saying? Live in gladness. Not despair. Live in blessing. Live in peace. Live in festivity as long as you're able to do it. As long as you're able to do it. If you've got enough money to, you know, buy a little bit nicer clothes or something, go ahead and do it. Enjoy what you have. Like Pastor has said, you're only as rich as what you spend. If you have all the money in the world but you don't spend a dime, you're not rich. You're only as rich as what you live. And if you're living a life that is, you know, blessed and fulfilling, even though you're not earning any more than the next guy, but you're wise, it's how you use your money. You're giving to the Lord. The Lord is blessing your life. He's taking care of your needs. You're a rich man. And if you're content with it, you're a rich man. See? You have all that you need. And that's what he's saying here, basically. In Isaiah 61 and verse 3, talks about the that we were to put off the mourning and put on the garments of praise and joy for heaviness. And so we're to put on those things and let them clothe us. Why not? You know, why not? Why not wear something sweet and something nice? I know that there is the spirit of legalism. What it wants to make you do sometimes is, well, things are tough and rough, and you don't want to be too happy. You want to kind of, you know, die to self and all of that. So don't wear makeup and don't look nice and kind of rag around and you know, because this life is hard. And see, that's contrary to the spirit of Jesus. He wore a more expensive garment, outer cloak. They gave it to him, and he wore it, and it was a blessing, and it was okay. It was all right. It was fine. There are some people that I know one pastor who's from a different church. God blessed him, and he got a certain deal. He had to buy a car, and he was going to get a used car. He's going to get a nice used car, and this deal came across that he could not pass up, and it was either a Mercedes-Benz or something like that, and he got it for less than what it would have cost him to get a normal used car, you know, a couple grand or something. And he got this thing for such a steal, he could not believe it. And so he bought the car. And his congregation was so stumbled and so upset at him, he had to sell it. And I say, shame on him. Shame on him, you know. And like somebody was telling me that had ministered around a lot of pastors. He told me of another case, too, where a woman got a mink at the thrift store for less than most of us get a regular coat, you know, just a super deal. And she had an eye for those things, and she, you know, they basically could only afford to go to the thrift store. And she bought that mink, and it was such a blessing to her, and the church about flipped out over it, and she had to get rid of it. She couldn't. Then I just say, God help us, you know, shame on us, shame, shame, shame. He said, legalism, and not allowing our brethren to be blessed. Not only one another to be blessed, we don't want to get in that kind of idea. Wear white. Wear it all the time. If you can do it, do it. Don't get the blessing out of it. Get the joy out of it. Remember, moderation in the fear of God. Verse 9, live joyfully with the wife whom thou lovest all the days of the life of thy vanity, which he has given thee unto the sun, all the days of thy vanity. For that is thy portion in this life and in thy labor which thou takest unto the sun. Live joyfully or enjoy life. Bring into existence, if you were to take the Hebrew and translate it here, bring into existence what life and happiness is with a wife whom thou hast loved. It implies a couple things. First of all, one wife is what God desires. And this is interesting coming from Solomon. And it also implies a fullness of satisfaction in that one, as they two become one. And the Hebrew also points out that this wife is a companion in the joy, not the source of the joy, which is interesting too. She's not the source of the joy, but a companion in the joy. Let me just say that wife is one of these chief goods for this temporal life. Mm-hmm. It's one of those goods for temporal life. Right, honey? One of those scriptures I know real well. Quote all the time, live joyfully with the wife whom thou lovest all the days of the life of thy vanity. But see, it's vanity, because after it's all done, then you're gone. So it's just a temporal relationship, you know. But find the good of life in it, and it's much more enjoyable to enjoy those things of life with her than without her. Amen. Verse 10, whatsoever thy hand finds to do, do it with thy might. For there is no work, nor device, nor knowledge, nor wisdom in the grave, whither thou goest. Brother, if you're going to live, live it now. Amen. Don't in a sour, somber, self-denial attitude deny yourself things that God doesn't want you to deny yourself. Be diligent. Fill your life up. Load yourself with living, knowing that it's not going to last long. Work while it is yet day, Jesus said, John 9 and verse 4. Work while it is yet day. Walk in the light while you have the light. There are some people that live more in 1 week than others live in a month. And that's the truth. They are involved, they're busy, and they're generally happy, because they have found out that I'm going to get the good out of life that I can. It reminds me of a toddler. The toddler is just opening up to what life is. Everything is new and fresh and exciting. You can't slow that kid down for anything. You know, I mean, you got to child-proof your home. Everything, all the little stuff gets taken up, you know. Everything that can be knocked over gets put away, you know. Put up all the gates and everything. And watch this kid go. And he's everywhere. And he's looking into everything. He's asking a million questions, you know. His whole life is just one big, you know, excitement. And if you have to spank him and discipline him, he'll shed a tear. But life is too exciting to stop at that. He's off again. You know, he's got to find something more to do, see. And because life is just so full. That's how God wants us to live life. Take advantage of it. You know, there's some that, you know, in an effort to, quote, keep balance, they deny themselves so much. They balance themselves right out of existence. They think it's balanced to die, you know. Got to keep everything in order. You know, there's a time to go for it in Bible college. There's a time to go for it. Well, honey, it's going to take some extra work. It's going to take some, you know, and all of this, but I'm not getting any younger. So let's go for it. That's what Merv Widener did. Had 6 kids. He was an older man. He says, I'm only going to live once. Sure, all these kids going to Bible college are young kids. I don't care what age I am. I want the Word of God. So he worked graveyards, supported his family. Can you believe that? 6 kids. Worked graveyards, went to Bible college full time. All the way through. The man is a legacy. And how God has dealt in his life and used him is absolutely phenomenal. And I know God's got him right where he wants him right now. And is doing deep things in that brother's life. And it's going to bring forth a marvelous work down there in Albuquerque. Because of all the Catholics down there, Catholic Charismatics, his brother was Catholic. Heart for God. He lived more life in those 4, 5, 6 years, you know, going through Bible college than most of us did, you know. And he slept very little, you know. He made it through. And he's glad for the commitment. And it was difficult, but it built something into him that he's going to have for eternity. And that's the point. That's the point. Some are afraid of a little bit extra work. Go for it. You're only going to get that chance once. You know, you need to try it. It's like when I had an opportunity to buy a home. Way back when. I won't tell you how far back. And it was back when interest rates were down pretty low. And we had a chance of getting a home. But instead of $100 a month payments, which I could afford, it would have been $160 a month payments for a house in Normandy Park. And it was about $17,000 home, you know, back then. In 2 years, that same house cost about $35,000 to $40,000. I would have had $20,000 equity sitting in my pocket in 2 years if I'd have bought it that time. And you know what I ended up paying for payments? More than that. In 2 years after that, was it 2 years? No, it was 4 years. In 2 years, it went just like that. And in 4 years after that, I bought a home that was much less, really. It was less, maybe not much less. It was less, it wasn't in Normandy Park. It cost me like, what, $35,000, something like that. And I was paying, no, it was about $30,000. And I was paying, you know, $300 a month. So $300 a month I was paying. I could have had that $160 a month. You see, I wasn't thinking. That spirit of legalism, I didn't want to press a little bit. See, I didn't want to force myself a little bit. I didn't want to put out that little extra. There are people that have had a vision, and they put out a little bit extra. And after a year's time, they've got a nest egg, you know, they got a little bit set away, and they stretched themselves, but it was all right, because in the end, they had such a blessing. And in fact, we're going to see a little bit later here, that's one of those observable goods in this life, is to, you know, to stretch yourself out a little bit, because what you build up like this really adds. You know, it's like an IRA. You start at the age of 30, you put in $2,000 every year. By the time you're 65, you're a millionaire. Because of the interest. And because of the addition of it. You know, it just keeps adding up. $2,000 a year. You're a millionaire after 35 or 40 years, something like that it's been in. Totally amazing. Totally amazing. And it's that kind of a foresight. So be diligent. Take advantage of the things in life. Take advantage of your situation. I'm not saying get an IRA. I don't have one. I can't afford it. But, you know, you do what you can do. All right. Verse 11 and 12. I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, neither yet bread to the wise, nor yet riches to men of understanding, nor yet favor to men of skill. But time and chance happens to them all. Have you ever wondered if Murphy read the book of Ecclesiastes? For man also knows not his time, as the fishes that are taken in an evil net, and as the birds that are caught in a snare, so are the sons of men snared in an evil time when it falls suddenly upon them. Life has indiscriminate powers in it. The rain falls on the just and the unjust. What should that make you do? Despair of life? No. What it should make you do is say, I will use every opportunity I've got, but I will know that I may be wiser than the next guy, and he ends up being the millionaire, not me. I may sink my money into an IRA and find out that, you know, the nation gets blown up 2 years later or something. You know, who knows what will happen. I may make my life miserable for 5 years, find out that it was all wasn't worth it. You know, and so, you know, you just got to be careful. Be as wise as you can. Just be as wise as you can. There's a guy I worked with, an iron worker, that he was, I brought him to church, a nice guy, a Catholic boy. He got so close to getting saved. But he wouldn't give his heart to the Lord. Oh, I love this guy. I wanted so bad to get saved. He ended up getting this thing on his mind. And I'll tell you what I think happened. He saw God was dealing with his life and drawing on him, and he said no. But he still kind of wanted to be a Catholic, you know. But there was something that happened in him at that point, because something turned. And he got this vision of a yacht. And he was going to build a yacht out of concrete. We were iron workers, so he was going to build it out of rebar and concrete. And, you know, they do have yachts like that. They're concrete hull. And so he was going to build this thing, and he had all the vision of this thing. It was going to cost him so much, and he'd be able to sell it for five times as much, and he'd be done in 2 years, or something like that. And he'd be able to put aside enough money. He was a single guy earning lots of money. And he sunk his life into that thing. It's like he got possessed of this thing. Every night, every weekend. Forget church, forget everything. 8 years later, he had dated in that thing. He had gotten married, and they lived in that thing even before it was finished.
She spent her good life on it, and it was in the newspaper down here in Des Moines, Highline. He said, I spent the best years of my life working on this thing. And now that it's done, it wasn't that big of a deal. He spent 8 years on that stupid thing. He walked by that thing for 8 years, constant, weekend after weekend after weekend after weekend after weekend, working steady and hard so he could earn enough money to go where? Sink into that crazy yacht. And I couldn't help but see the despair in the things that he said in that newspaper article, you know. And there was a guy in the chapel that was next door to him witnessing to him, and I witnessed to him every now and again. And so he kept hearing the word, and he just sunk his life into that crazy yacht. For what? The best years of my life were spent on this stupid hunk of metal and concrete. And now their marriage relationship, everything else, you know, who knows? So he burned himself out on something that was of no value. But recognizing that no matter, the race is not to the swift. You know, it's like what I have felt like sometimes with football. The best team in the country doesn't always win. Best basketball team doesn't always win. It's the indiscriminate things that happen in those games that turn the events. So you watch it, so what? So somebody wins, somebody loses, big deal. You know, so what? You know what I mean? So what? And maybe one of the worst teams in the country has got the best individual player on it. And do they really know? They don't really know. And so one year UW was supposed to be number one in the polls. What did they do? Flopped out. The whole thing was a big mess, you know? You don't know. Those things are so foolish. All right, verses 13 through 18 now. We see again here how wisdom is despised in this life of vanity. Listen to this. This wisdom have I seen also under the sun, and it seemed great unto me. There was a little city, and few men within it. And there came a great king against it, and besieged it, and built great bulwarks against it. Now there was found in it a poor wise man, and he by his wisdom delivered the city. Yet no man remembered that same poor man. Then said I, wisdom is better than strength. Nevertheless, the poor man's wisdom is despised, and his words are not heard. The words of the wise men are heard in quiet more than the cry of him that rules among fools. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good. It reminds us of Apostle Paul. Thy learning has made thee mad, Festus said, Acts 27:11. Made him mad? Really? That wisdom was saving his soul and the soul of thousands of others. And yet here they thought it was mad. You know, wisdom wins. Wisdom does win. Wisdom is better. Wisdom is greater than weapons of war, than all these other things, and it must be accounted for. And yet, wisdom never forces itself on anybody. Isn't that something? Wisdom doesn't march through the earth and demand that everybody bow to it. I think we have a beautiful type here. The city is the church. It's a small city. The enemy is the devil. He's large. He comes and puts great bulwarks against it. One wise, poor man. That's Christ. That's Christ. He delivered the city. And yet, is he honored? Is he praised and heralded before all the nations? No. He's hated and despised and rejected. So this wisdom must be dealt with because it is going to bring fruit and life. And yet, sin will quickly destroy the wisdom, the works that wisdom built up over the years. 1 Corinthians 15:33. Be not deceived. Evil associations corrupt good habits. It takes a while to build a habit. An evil association can destroy it that fast. So wisdom is so much greater than these other things, but it is ruined so quickly. It is just ruined so quickly. 1 Corinthians 5:6. Know you not that a little leaven leavens the whole lump? Why does it have to be that way? Wisdom is greater. Wisdom is so much better, and yet this other just tears it down so fast. It can take you hours and hours and hours. I used to love to do this when I was a kid. Take hours and hours and hours building these shelters under the dirt like an old army barracks that was hidden from the enemy. But then I'd be the enemy and I'd sabotage and I'd take my firecrackers and I'd plant them and I'd blow the thing to pieces. I love to do that. Take all these hours to build it and then smash it. And it was so much fun. My wife always, you know, I just, oh, if you're going to put all that effort into it, let it stay for a while, you know. It's just going to destroy anyway. So why not have the fun of watching it destroy? You know, build something out of the Legos and then just... I like that. You know, anyway. But, you know, it's going to bust up eventually anyway. All that wisdom it took to build that thing is destroyed in a minute. And so this is vanity. Oh, it's so vain. It's just maddening when you think about it. And yet that's what this life is. But it's still better to use wisdom. But it's not going to get you the chief good. It's better to use it, but it's not going to give you the chief good. It's almost like if you've been in a pressure type situation, like, well, I'll tell you one that I got caught in one time. I squeezed into this culvert type thing, and all of a sudden I started getting scared. Ever gotten claustrophobia? And I don't think I had claustrophobia, because I've been around people that have that, and boy, I wasn't like they were. I mean, they can go nuts. I mean, just absolutely out of their minds. But all of a sudden the squeeze of it started hitting me. And all of a sudden it seemed so small and narrow. And as soon as that happened, I started to panic a little bit. And as soon as you do that, your muscles flex, and all of a sudden your pressure, and you just feel the pressure of that culvert on you, and I couldn't move. And that panic strikes you. And in that situation, you knew you couldn't let yourself go, you know, you couldn't let yourself go. You would just go mad. And so you had to just, in that situation, all is vanity. All is vanity. It's better to be wise and control yourself, but you're still stuck. And so you get a hold of yourself and just calm down and just wait. And as you just breathe softer and the blood isn't pumping quite so hard, you lose a little bit of the thickness in your muscle, and you relax a little bit, and you kind of slipped out. Well, see, many of us are like, you've got a real wound, and it's the middle of the night, and that wound is just throbbing, just a fresh wound. And you're lying there in bed. And all is vanity, because nothing is going to take away the pain of that wound. But you have a choice. You have a choice to be wise or unwise. If you're wise, you'll learn to kind of get your mind and your body in a certain frame so that it's not totally tearing you apart. If you fuss at it and you're upset at it, it'll just hurt like crazy, and you'll ruin your whole night. Or you can just kind of say, I've got to learn to endure this and just be patient under this pain. And you just want to get really, you know, and make it stop. But nothing will make it stop. And so you kind of get yourself, your mind, in a frame of mind, and you maybe concentrate on something else, but it's still there. But you just do the best you can with it. Well, that's what this life is like. You're stuck with the pain. You're stuck with it. So do the best you can with it. And you can either be frustrated all the time because you're living in vanity, or you can learn to live it in moderation and just learn to endure. But it's still vanity. And so that's what we see. Okay, chapter 10. Continuing, a collection of wise conclusions. A collection of wise conclusions. Verse 1. Dead flies cause the ointment of the apothecary to send forth a stinking savor, so doth a little folly him that is in reputation for wisdom and honor. This is really true. This is something that he saw that was observable. The more delicate and costly a thing is, the easier it is corrupted, and the sadder the loss. Right? The more delicate and costly a thing is, the easier is its corruption, and the sadder is the loss. The dead flies, it's actually the flies of death. It's interesting that Beelzebub means Lord of the Flies. Dead flies cause the ointment of the apothecary to send forth a stinking savor. You know, the ointment of the apothecary is tremendously expensive. Very carefully mixed. It has just the exact proportions. And one fly can make the whole thing stink. A dead fly in that thing can send forth a stinking savor. It'll ruin the whole thing. And that's exactly what it's like when you're a righteous man or you're a godly man and you've built up a reputation. It's just like what he read here before. One sinner destroys much good, so a little folly destroys him that's in reputation. All it takes is one slip. People cut away your whole life. And you might say it's not fair. And we might agree with you, but people still do it. You might not like it. We might not like it, but it still happens. And so all it takes is one thing. Nixon will never be able to live down Watergate, even though, you know, in some ways, big deal. It's been going on for decades, that type of thing. There have been a lot of people that have done a lot worse and never got caught. And yet, you know, there's a certain attitude that's taken towards him because of it. We see some men of God
David, 2 Samuel chapter 12 and verse 14. Howbeit, because by this deed thou hast given great occasion to the enemies of the Lord to blaspheme, the child also that is born unto thee shall surely die. It's after he killed Uriah and committed adultery at Bathsheba. Because of the glorious position of David, the greater was the loss. And great occasion to the enemies of the Lord to blaspheme because of his sin. Great occasion to the enemies of the Lord. Now some people in this assembly are finding that out. The Lord puts them on the fire burner and they make some wrong decisions and it gives great occasion to the enemies of the Lord to blaspheme. Jehoshaphat, great man, wasn't he? Wonderful man. Towards the end of his life, he blew the whole thing out of the water. In 2 Chronicles chapter 18 all the way through chapter 19 and verse 2, towards the end of his life, he built some towers, you know, in high places. I can't remember just what all he did, but it messed up everything he had previously obtained. Josiah, you know that great, wonderful man of God, Josiah? Let me read 2 Chronicles. There was a great revival under him. 2 Chronicles 35, verse 22. It's sad to say, you know, we tend to remember the negative. 35, verse 22. Nevertheless, Josiah would not turn his face from him, but disguised himself that he might fight with him and hearken not unto the words of Necho from the mouth of God, and came to fight in the valley of Megiddo. Guess what happened? He got hit because of his pride. He got hit with an arrow by chance. It killed him. And he died. Great King Josiah, because he was going in matters too big for him. A little bit bigger than he should have been. And so these flies of death destroyed him. In Galatians chapter 5 and verse 9, the New Testament counterpart, this concept here, it says, a little leaven leavens the whole lump. Yeah, I guess I gave that to you. A little leaven leavens the whole lump. So, what am I saying? Realize how easily you can destroy what it's taken years to build. It's almost like a parent that's trying to repair a relationship with a child. They can go and just keep building that trust and building that trust and building that trust, and then if they respond in a negative way, they can just blow the trust away, and it takes a while to rebuild. Trust takes a while to build, you know that. Trust, you can't just immediately trust somebody in all areas. It takes a while to build that trust. And then if you just totally violate it, it takes a while to build it up again. See? All right, verse 2. A wise man's heart is at his right hand, but a fool's heart at his left. This is really an interesting thought. Remember chapter 2, verse 14 in Ecclesiastes. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. Now, your right hand is the hand of skill, the hand of honor. It's under control. You ever tried to throw a ball with your left hand? Now, some people are more ambidextrous than others. But in the East, they particularly were not so much so. I mean, you really favored the one hand, and there's a tremendous difference between the right and the left hand. And so the right hand is the hand of skill and of honor. And the wise man's heart is in his right hand. It's under control. His heart is under control. And he understands it. It's deftly cared for. Proverbs 14, verse 8. The wisdom of the prudent is to understand his way, but the folly of fools is deceit. Not only do they deceive others, but they deceive themselves. A fool is deceived. Deceit fills him. But it's the wisdom of a prudent man to understand his way, so that he knows where he's headed and why he's going there. There's a lot of people that are fools. They've never stopped to ask themselves, why am I doing this? Where am I going? What goals do I have in life? What do I plan to make out of my life? They don't know. They've never thought about it. That is foolishness. They've never stopped and thought, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? What's my motivation? What are my goals and my plans? To have your heart in your right hand is to know where you're headed, to have your goals clear. To have it in the left hand means you can't handle your heart. You don't know what's in it. You don't know the true nature of it. All you do is just drop it all the time. You expose it to others. You can't handle it deftly and skillfully. You don't realize. You don't know your motivations. So to be a wise man, stay under control of your heart. Know what you are doing and why you are doing it. George Albert's in his seminar on order of the Lord, he said, one of the things people need to learn to do is, what are you doing and why are you doing it? Know what you're doing. If you're angry, know that you're angry. Don't try to deceive yourself into thinking you're not angry. Know that you are now angry. If you are being slothful, know that you're being slothful. If you are being diligent, know that you're being diligent. See? Know what you're doing. Have your heart in your right hand instead of in your left like the fool. He'll slop along and his whole life is completely different than a wise man would say it is. And to know whether or not you're on or not, find a wise man who knows you real well. Go to him and ask him and say, what am I like? And see how close the two of you agree. And you'll find out whether your heart is in your right hand or whether it's in your left hand. Go to a wise man, maybe several wise men that know you, and ask them and say, what is my life like? What am I like? And if you concur with what they are saying, then you probably have your heart in your right hand. You know what's going on. You're in control and you understand and you recognize the weaknesses that you have. You know, it's a tremendous good to know what weaknesses you have. That's a good thing. And to know the way that you're going. That's good. Verse 3. Yea, also, when he that is a fool walks by the way, his wisdom fails him, and he saith to everyone that he is a fool. You've heard it said, better to hold your tongue and be thought a fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubt. The fool, he goes along, and he says to everyone that he is a fool. Not meaning that he says those actual words, but by the things that he says, it's obvious now that he is a fool. We see here that wisdom here, let's see, the word wisdom in verse 3 is literally heart. His heart fails him. Meaning, his understanding and his conception of life. He has no handle on reality. And he openly shows it. He doesn't know what to say or to do, so he just says something to fill up time. And he's a fool. Instead of carefully considering what he is doing and why, he just wants to make a scene. He just wants to expose his heart. He just wants to be heard. He wants to be known. Therefore, keep your eyes open and your ears open and keep your mouth shut. You've got two eyes and you've got two ears and only one mouth. You know, like you've heard it said. So speak less to hide your mistakes. And listen more and watch more to try to learn and to imbibe, you know, the understanding of life. And you'll find that your heart will come into your right hand. The fool openly shows his folly. Proverbs 13 and verse 16. Also Proverbs 18 verses 2 and 6. He's known by his many words. All right, verse 4. If the spirit of the ruler rise up against thee, leave not thy place, for yielding pacifies great offenses. Leave not thy place. That is, don't faint from what you must do. Don't fall back in fear or even rebel. Yield to the ruler. Don't let fear cause you to quit doing what you know is right. Now here it's talking about the person that's very timid, and if you say boo, he immediately freezes. It's saying here, don't therefore be overly affected by him that is even in a high place or a high honor from ceasing to do the will of God. We have an example of somebody that did exactly this in the New Testament. It's the man with the one talent. He looked at the Lord and he said, you're too big, you're too great, I'm scared, and he didn't do anything. Don't fall into that trap. If you feel like you're not as good as the next guy, don't let that stop you from doing things. If you feel like, I'll never be able to please so-and-so, or I'll never be able to reach the heights that so-and-so can, don't worry about that. I'll never be able to be like my big brother. Don't let that stop you. If the spirit of the ruler rises against you, if you find that, he doesn't appreciate what I'm doing, don't let that stop you. Keep going. Don't stop. Don't let any timidity or fear or condemnation or fear of failure stop you from living out this life. That is an evil. Don't hide your talent. Verses 5 and 6. There is an evil which I have seen under the sun, as an error which proceeds from the ruler. Folly is set in great dignity, and the rich sit in low place. Folly boasts itself, and therefore is exalted at times, because it flaunts herself. And yet the righteous, the rich, that is, sit in a low place. And he's seen this, and there's a folly on the earth. That's an example of that was Haman and Mordecai. Of course, the tables got turned later. But for quite some time, Haman was the one at the top, and Mordecai was the one down at the bottom. Verse 7, I have seen servants upon horses and princes walking as servants upon the earth. This is possibly a picture of David and Absalom. Here comes Absalom marching into Jerusalem while David fled on foot. He's seen all these things. I mean, there are a lot of reversals in this life. And things just aren't the way that they ought to be as far as in this life. Verse 8, he that digs a pit shall fall into it, and whoso breaks a hedge, a serpent shall bite him. Look at verse 9. Whoso removes stone shall be hurt therewith, and he that cleaves wood shall be endangered thereby. Now, this can be taken two ways, but either way it's true. Either you can take these as being motives of violence and hurt, or motives at doing good. Now, let me show you how it works. Digs a pit, you're trying to catch your neighbor, you fall into it yourself. You're breaking down a hedge to try to break in. A serpent bites you while you're trying to do it. Removing stones, that is a landmark to try to confuse your neighbor and to get more land to yourself. And you drop one on your foot. Or cleaving wood, you're busting down your neighbor's house and a splinter jams itself into your side and you're mortally wounded. See, those things happen. Or you could take it on the other hand. A positive, digging a pit. Here you are, you're trying to catch a lion, and he's been attacking the village, but you fall in. Or you're breaking down a hedge, that is to repair or to change it or whatever, and a serpent bites you. Or you're removing stones, you're trying to get them out of the field so that you can plant a field and have a freedom of planting, and you drop it on your foot. Or cleaving wood for fire, and you're endangered thereby. Now, so you can take it two ways. One way, if you try to get into lawlessness, watch out, it's going to hurt you. The pit you dig, you'll fall in yourself. And so if you're meditating on violence and lawlessness, watch out. It'll hurt yourself. And it does. A man that lives in wickedness, it ends up destroying himself from within. Or you can take it the other way. All the good that you do, don't think that because you have a good motive and you're seeking to do good that everything is going to turn out all right, nothing will ever go wrong. It just isn't that way. Sometimes all your good is accused as being evil. And it's just going to end up hurting. There was a wonderful man of God, Fred Champ Sr. I love that man. I worked with him for a few years and really love the Lord. Reminds me of Russ Barnett. And he was back visiting some relatives back in Kansas. This guy was a legacy. This guy was such an amazing man of God. Used wonderfully of the Lord. Always witnessing. Always winning souls to the Lord. All the time. Everywhere he went, he was witnessing. Precious man. Heart of gold. All he talked about was Jesus. He was 70-some years old, like 73. Still roofing actively. An amazing man. Up there, hot tar roofing. And he drove back to Kansas, and like he was, somebody was in the dire straits by the side of the road. Some drunkards had come around the road, missed the curve, and went into the ditch. He pulled over, he and his friend, and they were helping him, and another drunk came around and killed him. Missed the same corner, smashed into him, killed him, and I think killed one of the other guys or something. I can't remember what. And, I mean, it was such a shock to everybody, because this guy, it was almost like he would never die. And he was such an anointed man of God. Such a precious brother. And he was doing good and got killed. What do you say? What do you say? And so those things do happen in life. All is vanity in this life. You can't expect everything to just come out just so. Okay, let's go.